Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live, Saturdays from 9 to noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM in BC, Canada. For more information, check out www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye. Here's Jane Williams.
This week, the United States and Canada took a big step towards harmonizing their immigration control systems. An accord signed by the two countries on Monday will dramatically change the way Canada treats visitors, potential immigrants, and refugee claimants. The new border accord is just one of several measures that will make it harder for refugees to seek asylum in Canada. Janet Dench is executive director of the Canadian Council for Refugees. Her organization has taken a strong stand against what it calls the scapegoating of refugees since September 11th. And Janet Dench joins me now from her home in Montreal. Hello, Janet.
Hello.
One of the most alarming aspects of the accord is a pledge to negotiate what's called a safe third country agreement on the treatment of refugees. What does that mean exactly?
This is a concept that has been used particularly in Europe, but also elsewhere in the world. And it's a concept that says that a refugee who has traveled through what is deemed to be a safe third country on the way to whatever country we're in, so in the case of Canada, if a refugee has come through the United States and makes a refugee claim in Canada, then Canada can send the person back and say, well, look, you could have made your refugee claim in the United States. So turns you away and doesn't give you a hearing on your claim for protection.
And what percentage of refugees coming to Canada come through the States?
Well, it's actually a very high percentage and going up. It's possibly around 40%, maybe even more now. So a very large percentage of the refugee claimants that come to Canada do use that way to get here. And I just say in passing that it's rather ironic when we've been hearing since September 11th in particular people saying that Canada is a weak link and that Canada's immigration policies expose the United States to all kinds of dangers. And in fact, the experience of refugee claimants is that they find it much easier to get into the States than to get into Canada. And that has a lot to do with the policies that the Canadian government has in place, interdiction policies and programs, which are programs that try to prevent what they call the improperly documented travelers from getting to Canada. Now, if those programs are stopping people who come with illegitimate goals, then that's all well and good. But unfortunately, the people that get affected by those programs as well are refugees who are trying to escape persecution and who are using whatever means they can to get out of their countries and try to find a place of refuge.
If the refugees then end up being returned to the United States, what kind of treatment do they get there?
Well, the United States has laws and programs that in some ways are similar to Canada, but in many ways are very different. One of the particular concerns relates to the use of detention. The United States has been using a lot of detention, particularly since 1996 when they brought in new legislation. And there is a rapidly growing industry of jails and detention centers in the United States, many of them privately run. And refugees are among the detainees. People can spend months, even years in detention. Even in some cases, there are refugees who have been recognized as refugees and yet still remain in detention.
And are the proportions of people who are eventually accepted quite different in the United States?
They're probably not as different as we've been used to thinking and as they used to be in the past. It's difficult to compare because the U.S. system is rather different. And there can be variations depending on the countries. In some ways, it's possible for a person to be accepted in the United States who would be refused in Canada and vice versa. We have different jurisprudence, so the courts have interpreted the refugee definition differently.
I guess one important difference also is that in Canada, refugees are protected by the Charter, and they're not protected by the Constitution in the United States, if I'm correct.
Yes, that's something that we as Canadians can be very proud of, is that our Supreme Court decided in 1985 that the Charter does apply to people who do not have status in Canada. It recognized that all human beings have basic human rights and that we need to protect them. The United States, unfortunately, has more of a tradition of distinguishing between Americans and the rest of the world, with the rest of the world not counting for very much. And as Canadians that are concerned about the protection of rights, the Safe Third Country agreement or notion has got to be a big concern, because what we'd be saying when we turn away a refugee claimant that is knocking at our door is saying, well, you go to the States and you ask them for protection. But if the Americans, who don't use exactly the same standard as us, if they turn that person down and the person ends up being sent back to their home country, then we indirectly are responsible for sending that person back to persecution, possibly to arbitrary detention, torture, even death.
It's interesting, because we won't send prisoners to the United States on occasion because of the death penalty. And there's a parallel there that could be made.
Yes, there is. And just the some of the conditions in detention in the United States, there have been court cases where refugees, where people in Canada were not deported back to the United States because while their hearings were ongoing, because courts recognized that locking someone up in detention in the United States, particularly given the conditions of some of these detention centers, could be a cruel treatment to those people.
Now, on Thursday, a Commons committee recommended greater use of detention and deportation here in Canada. On what grounds are they suggesting these changes?
There's a lot of pressure for the use of detention, and we've seen the results of that already since September 11th, just in the individual decisions that are being made by immigration officers, not a change in policy as such, but just a general sense that we better detain more. And in one way, we can understand that everybody is nervous since September 11th, and everybody's wondering what went wrong and what do we need to do to ensure that things like those attacks don't happen again. But unfortunately, refugees are very vulnerable to getting the short end in any kinds of measures that are taken of this sort. Refugees, especially refugee claimants that are arriving here that don't have any status here, they often don't speak English or French, they don't know people who can defend them effectively, and they are often also they are often vulnerable to racist perceptions that we have in Canada. And so decisions are made about detention which don't take account of the fact that detention is maybe one of the things that they were fleeing in their home country. Somebody who gets jailed, for example, recently in Egypt, for example, a group of gays who were jailed in Egypt, well, we will count that as a very serious human rights violation. But suppose some of those people escaped and came to Canada, and we put them in detention because we weren't sure who they were. Well, what in fact is distinguishing us from the persecutory state?
The day after the accord was signed on the Tuesday, Immigration Minister Eleanor Caplan announced new visa requirements for citizens of 8 countries. Why were those 8 countries singled out?
Well, the press release that she produced to make that announcement is rather interesting to study in itself, because she gives different reasons for applying the visa restriction to the different countries. In some cases, they were talking, and among them, they were talking about, they seem to be suggesting that Zimbabwe is one of them. They were saying that people are using the country's passports. There's some countries where you can almost buy a passport and then you use it, and if it's visa exempt to get to Canada, then it's a way that people could use it to get to Canada. But Zimbabwe is actually a country where we've been having an increasing number of refugee claimants coming from, and there is a very high acceptance rate from that country. And then the press release goes on to talk about Hungary, and it mentions that that we don't consider Hungary to be a refugee-producing country, but there have been a number of refugee claimants coming from it. Which is true, there have been quite a number, and the acceptance rate has been relatively small. But it's interesting that they don't make the point about Zimbabwe. If in Hungary's case we should put the visa on because we've got refugee claimants and they're not real refugees, then if we use the same argument, we should say in Zimbabwe's case, we should certainly not put the visa on because there's many people that are coming and they're being recognized as refugees by our refugee determination system. So by putting the visa requirement on, we're effectively blocking the door to people who are trying to escape persecution.
I understand that Canada has 20 more countries that it doesn't require visas from than the United States.
Yes, although there are some instances where it goes the other way, where the U.S. doesn't require a visa and we do. But Canada does require a visa from most of the countries that refugees in large numbers come from.
Now, Bill C-36, the anti-terrorism bill, is before the Senate right now. Your organization believes that this bill could easily be used against refugee claimants. Can you explain how you think that would happen?
The bill does not make any specific distinctions between citizens and non-citizens or refugees and other categories of people. And that, from our point of view, is something that we welcome. We shouldn't be treating refugees differently or refugee claimants differently from other people. But one of our major concerns is in relation to the definition of terrorism. Terrorism actually already exists in the Immigration Act and is highly problematic because there is no definition at all, which means that individuals can interpret it in whatever way they like. But in Bill C-36, things are not improved really by having a definition because the definition is so vast that it will include many individuals and groups that are fighting against oppressive regimes and who are characterized as using violent means, because often regimes that don't like to be criticized will portray their opponents as using violent means even where they're not. So the definition that we see in C-36, which is so very large, and people have commented in the Canadian context that it could be used to capture the activities of striking nurses or Aboriginal protesters and so on, we have to also think about how that would be applied using the powers in the Immigration Act to make inadmissible the equivalent to striking nurses or protesting Aboriginal groups and so on in other countries that are actually coming to Canada to seek refuge because they're being persecuted.
The terrorist acts of September 11th were committed by people who were on visitor or business visas or immigrants to the United States. Why has there been this focus so much on refugees then in Canada?
This is very, very disturbing and sad effect of the September 11th events. And interestingly, I have talked recently to colleagues in other countries, United States and the United Kingdom, where the links have not been made. There's been a lot of negative consequences, but people have not been particularly targeting refugees. And in Canada, we have, and the refugee system has been taking a very serious battering. I think to some extent it is because there have been critics of the refugee system that have been using the occasion of September 11th as a platform to pursue their criticisms of the refugee system, and that are wanting the Canadian Alliance Party in particular has used the aftermath of September 11th to make generalized calls for detaining refugee claimants. So there are people with political agendas that are using this and distorting the situation. As you point out, there were not refugee claimants that were involved in the September 11th attacks, but the facts have been distorted in order to allow people to continue and emphasize their attacks on the Canadian refugee regime.
So, in a sense, it sounds like refugees are being sacrificed to make us all feel safer in some way.
Well, the government has not substantially backed down on its commitment, such as it is, to refugee protection, and that's something that we have to be grateful for. But the government is also subject to pressures, And as I was mentioning before, we're seeing more people are being detained, and that is a response to the kinds of public pressure. And if there is not more call from the Canadian public to the government to ensure that we stay true, that we remain committed to values of refugee protection, to respecting human rights, then the government may accede to the pressures that are coming from the other side. So I would like to emphasize how important it is that people who do believe in protecting refugees speak up and don't just accept all of these arguments that we should close off the refugee system.
Jean Chrétien said this week that Canadian sovereignty isn't at risk because we all gain when we have security. Is he facing much opposition as he moves us closer to the American system?
The landscape has shifted very dramatically since September 11th, and many things that were previously unthinkable have become almost fait accompli. The situation with the Safe Third Country Agreement, which we were talking about earlier, this was something that was not proposed in the 1990s by the Canadian government, who was pushing very hard to get an agreement with the Americans, and the Americans walked away from the table. And now it looks like an agreement will be signed, and many things that the Canadian government previously would not agree to in terms of sharing information, personal information that goes contrary to our privacy concerns, those things seem to have changed. Those commitments have gone, and things that wouldn't have happened before are now happening.
You mentioned that it's important for people to express their opposition. Where do you think they could do that most effectively?
The media is an important channel. We found it difficult to get out our message into the media because there seems to be much more enthusiasm for printing the points of view of those who were targeting refugees. But it is important for people to speak out in the media and also to talk to their MPs, make their MPs realize that there is a constituency out there that cares what happens to refugees.
Thank you very much, Janet.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Janet Dench. She's Executive Director of the Canadian Council for Refugees, and she spoke with us this morning from Montreal.
Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live, Saturdays from 9 to noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, 102.7 FM in BC, Canada. For more information, check out www.vcn.bc.ca/redeye.